Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Well, it's tax season. Like, who says it with like sounding like I'm Oprah when it comes to tax season? Because, you know, that's not fun. But we're going to learn about all things, especially for veterinary professionals, the business behind it, practice owners, vet students, all those different things. And joining us is Isaiah Douglas. How are you, my friend?
I am doing well. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show. So Isaiah Douglas is a partner in Vincere Wealth Management, a fee-only financial advisory firm. He's focused on working within veterinary medicine to increase the net worth of veterinarians by bringing the professional and personal together. I love that. Isaiah is the host of the Veterinarian Success Podcast, which features interviews and discussions of clinical, business, financial, and personal topics in the lives of veterinarians. He actively speaks within the veterinary medicine industry via students, podcasts, video interviews, and conferences, and he's with us now. And so let's get into it, Isaiah. So like, it is tax season, and it's often, I got to tell you, it's so confusing for all of us who are not tax professionals. I was just telling you before we got on about like 1099s and W-2s and all that thing. So what do you think is one important thing that all veterinarians should understand better about taxes?
Yeah, it is confusing. And it is one of those things where they, the powers that be always talk about, hey, we're going to simplify taxes, right? We're going to make it really easy. And it never seems to happen, right? It just gets more confusing and there's more steps to it. But I think what's applicable to everyone, because not everyone's going to get a 1099, right? Maybe they are an associate, they're a W-2. So they're going to have kind of those taxes withheld. But I think the biggest kind of base layer piece that a lot of CPAs, accountants maybe don't always explain well is that tax brackets and the way that they are structured. So it's progressive. So you might hear people say, hey, I'm in the 24% tax bracket. And a lot of times, and it seems silly, but most people think, hey, all my income then is at 24%. And it's not quite the way that it works, right? Like, you kind of fill up each one and it grows from there, and you're going to have an average rate. So yes, if you're in the 24% tax bracket, you're going to have your income that is now being created once you hit that bracket is at 24%. But you're also getting kind of a blended rate starting all the way from dollar one all the way up to kind of wherever you're at. So great example, had a practice owner client married filing jointly in the 24% tax bracket. Their average tax rate that they paid was about 15.4%. And so I'll oftentimes hear folks talk about like, oh, taxes, you know, yeah, it's frustrating. Oh, they're horrible, right? Like, they're so painful. And it's important. You want to be tax efficient. You want to understand taxes better, not pay as much as maybe you have to. But at the end of the day, I feel like more people need to understand taxes might not be the biggest thing that they need to focus on with kind of the financial planning focus, but just know that there's going to be a blended rate and it's not all at that highest rate. And I think that's one thing that is applicable to everyone, is just trying to understand exactly how the brackets work.
So you mentioned with, I guess a good situation you mentioned is the husband and wife that filed together. And if you're a practice owner, does that, you know, filing has got to be a little bit more complicated, I would assume, you know, in terms of like practice ownership or whatever. What's a piece of advice you can give a practice owner on that?
Yeah. So I think practice owners, first and foremost, you know, both of us, we're not CPAs. We don't play them on a podcast, on TV, on anything else. Right. So I think they're worth their weight in gold to have a really good CPA that's going to help come alongside, and especially those within veterinary medicine that get the business. And so if anyone needs good advice and guidance on that, I'm happy to make some referrals. There's great folks. But yeah, for practice owners, you have the ability as a business owner to write off a lot more expenses. And so you can net pay less in taxes. And so I think there's kind of three key really good suggestions that folks can take to their CPA and be asking about. And so I'm going to kind of highlight three and then I'll go back through them. So the first one would be what's called the Augusta rule. The second would be if they own practice real estate, looking at that a little bit deeper. And the last one, which I know will make any CPA that listens cringe a little bit, is the idea of this, okay, I'm an LLC, and then when do I make the S-Corp election? And so the first one, I'll go back, is the Augusta rule. And to me, this is a really cool rule. It's an easy one to get started. And that is, if I'm a practice owner, I want to start hosting events or company outings or any kind of, let's say, management meetings at my house or maybe a vacation residence. The IRS allows a business owner to rent their primary or vacation residence for up to 14 non-consecutive business days a year. And the best part is it's excluded from taxable income. And so what you can do is go on to VRBO, Airbnb, look in your location, say, what would a house cost me to rent in this area if I wanted to have a meeting for a day? And then use that as your comp. And that can be something where you're able to basically pay yourself from the right hand to the left hand, because again, the business and you, the personal side, are the same, but you can exclude that from income. So it's a nice way to kind of move that back over to the personal side without really paying anything. So the guest rule, as the name kind of alludes to, is all tied a little bit to the masters, which is kind of interesting. So that's one that has worked well. We have a couple of veterinarians that have done it. Others that are like, I don't know, I've never heard of that. And then it's just one to have a conversation with. And so if you're going to be doing events and having the team over, whether it's like a backyard barbecue or you're trying to do some team building, try to do it your place. And that might be something that you can do from a tax perspective. But the next one being real estate. And real estate had lots of conversations. A lot of people want to, you know, own real estate. They want passive income. I think always the first place to target is looking at the real estate of the practice. And if you do own the real estate or have recently purchased or looking at it, two things to look at would be getting a cost segregation study and then evaluating how you're taking depreciation. So how are you going to leverage that from a tax perspective? There's going to be certain assets of the building that you can depreciate quicker. And there's going to be certain things that you can maybe take slower over time. And when you think about depreciation, it's just the idea of taking an asset and its useful life. So there's going to be certain things that they wear out, right? So anything that we have over time, clothes, anything, it wears out. Same way with a building, right? There's going to be certain aspects of that building that are going to wear out quicker. And depending on how you have your income structured, and maybe how certain years happen, maybe you have a buffer or like a banner year, awesome year, really high income. Maybe you need a little bit more depreciation. Maybe you want to take more off on the real estate side, because typically most owners, and they should be doing this, right? They have their real estate holding company as one kind of business entity. And then you have your practice and really that, you know, veterinary clinic as a separate business. And so I think it's really important to talk with your CPA about if you own real estate, looking at getting this study done for cost segregation. So understand all the different pieces and what you can depreciate from there. And the last one, which I know many CPAs like to chat through, which is the S-Corp filing. And the idea of an S-Corp versus an LLC, it's really just a filing status. And I think that often gets confused where people will state, oh, well, I should start a business and have an LLC. Well, an LLC isn't like this magic tax thing that all of a sudden just gives you all these extra benefits. It's really there for more of a liability perspective. And then an S-Corp, what's nice with that is it allows you to not have to pay self-employment tax, which is 15.3%. And the key there is if you're going to elect S-Corp status, you have to pay yourself a reasonable salary. So what's reasonable, right? If you're a practice owner, a reasonable salary, would you go out and could you hire an associate veterinarian for that salary? If the answer is no, it's probably a little low. And that's something that you need to work with your CPA on and what is reasonable. But the nice thing there is there's a couple extra steps. The business is actually going to file its own tax return versus with the LLC, it's kind of all lumped in together. So you're going to get a K-1 and then you'll put that on your personal return. With an LLC, it's all going to be kind of directed through your personal return. So key thing there is if you're a practice owner and you have a really good, consistent, steady income, maybe you've been open for a while or you bought a business that's doing well, S-Corp is a nice thing to look at. I think it can be a great tool and a lot of owners should be doing it. I know a lot of them are, but sometimes there's certain folks that like them a little bit more than others. And it's not, you know, a magic formula that's always the correct answer, but, more times than not, I think the S-Corp is a really good option from a business owner perspective.
Excellent. Great descriptions. It's really good. I didn't know about that. So it's awesome. So what would be, you know, one area in investing in taxes that might surprise the listeners that they can look at on their tax return?
Yeah. So I think, again, wanting to be actionable, because I think that a lot of times, anytime you'll hear, let's say a tax person or attorney or a financial advisor, they'll talk and it's all this great stuff. And you're like, oh, it's really niche and nuanced. Like, how do I actually put this into action? This isn't applicable to me. So I think the easiest one for anyone thinking about the investment stuff in your tax return, when you get your tax return back, go to Schedule D and then look at line item 13 on your tax return. And then that's the line that's going to show capital gains distributions. So capital gains are going to be taxed at short term, which is going to be your ordinary income rate, or long term, which is anything held over a year. And that's either 0, 15, or 20. So for most people, it's 15 or 20%. So you want to get more long-term capital gains, obviously, because it's taxed a little bit better than short-term. And if you see that that line 13 on Schedule D is really high, there might be a couple reasons for it, but it also might indicate that maybe you're not being as tax efficient as you want to be. And maybe there's some questions you need to ask. Either, I mean, a lot of times CPAs will highlight it and they'll say, hey, maybe you should talk to your financial advisor. Like, you seem to be paying a lot of taxes. In 2022, most investments were down. So there wasn't a lot of people that made a ton of money in the investing world. And so hopefully that that line's not as high, but you can even go back in years prior and check that out. And so one of the key things that you might notice is if you have non-retirement assets, so let's say you're saving outside of retirement accounts and you have a investment that's, let's say, inefficient from a tax perspective and it's paying out capital gains. So a lot of times mutual funds will have that. One easy thing that you can do is take a mutual fund in a taxable account and then exchange it and own something different called an exchange traded fund. So ETF versus mutual fund, think of it like Christmas. You could have the same gift inside. It's just wrapped different. Maybe this one has a bow. This one doesn't. The exact same thing inside. So the exact same gift inside. So mutual fund or ETF, the ETF is going to be about 0.75% more tax efficient if it owns the exact same things, just due to the structure. So no one likes to pay more in taxes if you're going to own the same, let's say, the same basket of stocks. Just own it in an ETF. It's typically going to be a lot more tax efficient. And so if you see that, line 13 on your Schedule D is significantly higher, ask some questions. And if you sold investments, let's say in 2022, hopefully you took some losses if you had them so that it can offset gains in the future. So tax loss harvesting is a great thing to do. And then that allows you to take up to $3,000 per year into the future if you don't use it all in 1 year. So those would be the two that I think are applicable to everyone. The reason I think it's applicable to everyone is most people are also saving for the tax bomb. And so you want to be as efficient as possible as well in that, that account, knowing that in the future, you're probably going to, you know, use those funds for student loans as well.
And what about the relief veteran? So I have several of my friends that are doing relief work, and I know it's a little bit different. So is there anything that they need to be on the lookout for?
Yeah. So relief veterinarians, you talked about the podcast that I host. I just had Cindy Trice fairly recently from Relief on my podcast.
Shout out to Cindy Trice.
Yeah. So shout out to Cindy. It's a great episode for anyone that's a relief veterinarian. I think she does a great job because she just kind of highlights, hey, as a relief veterinarian, you run your own business. So the things that we just talked about for practice owners, the idea of the S-Corp still has merit here as well. The Augusta rule, you're not really having a lot of staff. You're probably not going to host a lot of events and outings at your house, and you probably don't have any practice real estate. So those two, not as applicable, but the S-Corp LLC, still applicable for relief veterinarians. And then I think just having good records. So tracking mileage is huge, right? So the IRS has adjusted mileage over time to where you're able to either look at the actual expenses of the vehicle that you're using or, you know, a per mileage piece, but you have to track that mileage to show, hey, this is exactly what it was used for. So that's a big one. Home office deduction. You're doing notes, you're doing prep work, you're scheduling stuff. You can do up to 300 square feet of your house, your apartment, and then use that as a tax write-off. I think that's huge. And then let's say you're going to a conference. Let's say you're doing CE. Maybe you want to go to this location.
Like a fetch conference?
Yeah, I was thinking maybe a fetch conference, and it's in an area that you haven't been and you wanted to maybe stay a little bit longer and have a little bit of a vacation, right? Maybe you are able to write off the travel for the flights, the hotel stay for the period of time during fetch, but use that to your advantage as well, because that is a business expense where you're going and getting CE, you're expanding your network, you're doing all these different things, and you can kind of use that from a personal side as well. And so that would be the one that I would encourage folks to look at. There's certainly more. And I think for a lot of relief veterinarians, it's just trying to get good systems in place to track this stuff so they can take it back to whoever's doing their taxes or if they're doing it themselves. And then just having a checkbox of, okay, these are different things that are there that I can do. But S-Corp or LLC, tracking mileage, home office deduction, travel and CE. Yep.
Excellent. And the last group of professionals I want to chat about is the new graduates. So exciting. We get a whole new boatload of colleagues that are joining this profession very soon. And I know with that comes the student loans and, you know, taxes. So how does student loans impact taxes? It's been a hot topic buzzword for the past year or two, I would say. So I'm sure I'd love to hear your insight on that.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is when are student loans going to be turned back on to be paid, right? Yeah. And I think that's the tricky part. We had an internal bet on our team that last year, I was like, it's going to get extended. There's no way they're going to turn back on. And I won the bet, which is good, but student loans and taxes is definitely one to think about as well. And I think the two biggest areas are, you know, what is your gross income? So what are you making? And then are you married? Knowing those two different things and looking at that from that perspective will be a big driver, because the amount of money that you pay in your student loans and the amount of money that's going to be forgiven in the future, going back to the kind of tax bomb, that's really, really important. So if you're married and you both have student loan debt, it's likely worth evaluating, looking at, you know, do we file as married filing separately or married filing jointly? We've looked recently on our team for a lot of different folks, and the married filing separately option has been much better. So something just to consider. Now, you might have additional tax prep costs if you're paying someone to do it, because you're going to actually have two tax returns versus one. But when you look at how much in student loan savings it'll be, it's usually worthwhile. The other one to consider is with student loans, if you have the ability to save in a 401k, let's say it offers traditional or Roth options. So traditional being I get the tax deduction today. Roth, I'm going to pay the taxes today, but I get tax-free when I withdraw it in the future. Depending on your income, it might make sense to try to maximize the traditional option to basically just drive down your taxable income in that year. Because remember, we talked about the tax brackets, and you might want to just try to say, I want to squash my taxable income as low as possible, because that's going to be what is built on my student loan payment, because it's based on discretionary income, 10 or 15%, oftentimes for most of the repayment plans that are out there. So that's one that can be really helpful, where you're not only saving for the future, but you can help lower what your student loan payment is today. And then lastly, thinking about the tax bomb, that's going to be ordinary income in the year that it is forgiven. So prepare accordingly, start saving early. You can save a little bit less versus trying to be like, oh yeah, I know I have 20, 25 years to pay for this thing. And now it's year 18. I need to really start stocking away some money here, right? Yeah. Those are going to be taxes, ordinary income in the year that they're paid. So that can be a really big expense, where it could be a $75, $80, $100,000 additional burden. So you want to make sure that you start thinking about that early and often, putting some money away. And if, let's say, student loans, somehow something changes, government changes their minds, it's just extra savings for you to do whatever you want with. So it's just a good idea not to delay that and think through, what do I need to save kind of per paycheck, set aside, get it invested. Again, we want to be tax efficient, as we talked about earlier, and not pay a bunch of capital gains, so that money can compound over a long period of time.
I can only imagine what that must feel like for the new graduates, knowing like you have income coming into your checking account or whatever, and then it's time. And then you're like, oh my God, you know, and it could vary, but I mean, a payment is a payment. It's like a car payment, you know? So it's like, you know, it's going to be something that you maybe, I like what you said, because you do need to prepare, save up for it, versus being like sticker shocked when it happens.
Yeah. And it could be a lot of like a huge impact in a year, where maybe you're gonna have to liquidate things that you weren't ready for. And that puts you back, versus I would much rather have the surprise of, hey, you know what? This money is now mine again, and I can do it whatever I want with, versus the scrapping together to figure out what it is. Cause it isn't something that you're going to put on a payment plan. Like, it is due in that year. And it's just important to understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this has been fantastic, Isaiah. So where can we learn more about you? Anything else you want to share with the audience and our listeners while I still have you?
Yeah, sure. So I would say after this podcast, right, continue to subscribe here, listen to everything. If you ever want to hear other kind of content related to veterinary medicine, I host the Veterinary Success Podcast. It's a weekly show. You can find me at vincerewealth.com, and you go click on the veterinary tab. And so we have a lot of content there as well. And yeah, if you're out at any of the conferences, I try to let people know when I'm there, and would love to be able to connect, chat through things. And basically my role is to continue to take the personal professional time together, because I think within veterinary medicine, it's a fantastic career. There's a lot of opportunity moving forward to do a number of different things. And so just kind of trying to provide the advice and guidance that you all and your peers need. So that's the big one for me. So yeah, appreciate the opportunity today.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate it. Like, listen, I've been in this field my entire life, and we're always open, especially for financial help and assistance, to get feedback. And counseling. So thank you for working with our profession, because we're unique. And so it's nice to have somebody who gets it. So thank you so much. And Isaiah Douglas, so you can find more about him through Vinceer Wealth Management as well. So thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Continue to do great work out there, my friends. Don't forget to rate this podcast. Helps us out significantly. And we'll see you next week right here on the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.